Check, check.
You're gonna be over there?
Yeah. Thanks for coming this morning. We have an illustrious panel full of wit and wisdom here for you to talk about Ubermix this morning. We're really excited to be here, actually. I'm Jim Klein, Director of Technology at Saugus Union School District. I developed the Ubermix some years ago, and there are a lot of districts all over the country using it. And I guess I'll let the rest of the panelists just introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Andrew Schwab. I'm Director of... title is something. Anyway, it's Communication Management Information System Services.
That's impressive.
At Berryessa Union in San Jose. Previous to that, I was at LeGrand Union High School District and first saw Jim present at some point. And he said he had this magical piece of software that would turn a netbook into something as easy to use as a cell phone. That if you had a problem, you just turn off, turn it back on, and it fixed itself. So we were looking at doing one-to-one, and that's how we got started. So, and now we're looking to do one-to-one again. So happy to be here to talk about that.
Cool.
I'm John Patton. I'm the Director of Technology for the Sullivan Union School District. It's a K-8 in Modesto. And our experience with... Ubermix, I guess, dates back to right when you were starting to get started with that at a EETT. I don't know if it was a conference, an EETT workshop.
No, we were at a reading.
Oh, it was a reading.
We were reading for the grant. Yeah. So we actually built this as part of an EETT grant. So we'll just get into the panel discussion. Yeah. We'll get to Larry in a second.
we were writing our planning app. Project with student laptops, full-size laptops and stuff, and with the amount of money that we were eligible for, we were looking at a couple carts, maybe, or a cart or something for this program we were hoping to get funded. And after talking to Jim, he said, for that cart, you can probably get about 3 classrooms worth of netbooks, and if you put this software, this Linux Ubermix that I've created, showed it to us, and you can do a lot better. And support issues with it go away, virus issues, just like Andrew was saying, it's kind of like a cell phone in terms of the ease of use.
So. Yeah, that was actually pretty cool because we were looking at it as a strategy for our EETT because we knew we were going to get a lot of money, but it was how can we build it out, how can we support it without all the people? It takes a lot of staff to support a laptop, and we kind of. It was nice actually to bump into John there because he told us what he was trying to do, and I told him what we were trying to do, and we kind of collaborated on it. And John was aggressive enough, courageous enough actually to give it a shot to see how it worked out. So we both actually were kind of founding members of this idea, and working with John was great because between the two of us we were able to work through a lot of issues and make it work really well for schools. So that's my introduction as well. So go Larry.
I'm Larry Regal. I'm the IT director for Hillmore Unified. We're probably a quarter of the size of the smallest district here. We're about 2,300 kids, K-12, about a half hour south of Modesto. Nobody really knows where Hillmore is. Hillmore Cheese, that's true. Some people know that one. But first time I ever saw the Ubermix was actually at, I think, the CVQ. It was John's presentation. I thought, oh, that looks pretty cool. And did a lot of testing before we finally got this school year about 200 netbooks for our sixth graders. And adding 200 with no extra support, it's just myself and James over here to support for all the rest of the 1,000-something computers. So adding 200 with almost no extra labor, it's fantastic. Zero support, almost zero support, basic questions here and there. I have to deal more with hardware. Then I have to deal with any software issues. The kids take to it like nothing. And with a lot of PD, our teachers are really working with it really well. It's very easy to use.
So how many of you, is everyone here familiar with Ubermix? I see a lot of familiar faces, so I think a number of you know what it does and what it's about. Is there anyone here who isn't familiar with Ubermix at all? so I don't have to go through the details.
Terry wants more details.
You want more details? Okay, well, like the slide says, essentially the concept was to build something that's as easy to use and reliable as a cell phone. I mean, that's the way I built it. This was before, keep in mind, this was before the iPad came out. Okay, and if you look at the interface for UberMix, which I had up here a minute ago, it is, well, I've got it actually in a different mode here, but it is a lot like an iPad in many respects. Let me switch the launcher.
Nobody can see us. It's a little small, but that's what it is.
So this is the default mode. And as you can see, it looks a lot like an iPad, right? I mean, it's got big icons. It's got descriptions of what they do. You can't move the icons around or anything to mess up the interface. Well, you can, but you have to actually figure that out. And we wanted that. You know, we wanted it to have kind of two personalities. We wanted it to have a personality where you could just walk up and use it and expect it to work. But we also wanted it to have a personality where if kids wanted to tinker with it, if they wanted to play with it and those sorts of things, they had that capacity as well. So one of the things that we don't do, for example, is take out root rights or admin rights to these machines. We give kids full rights to the machines if they want to figure out how stuff works. And you said most people say, when I say something like that, is they say, holy cow, well, you know, what happens when they break the machine? How can the teachers count on this and rely on this? So part of that was building in a facility to recover really rapidly from problems. So if a kid gets in here and tinkers with it and messes with it and messes up their software or makes it not work, we built in a rapid recovery mechanism so that you could reboot the machine, press a key, and about 20 seconds later or so, it's undone all of the changes that the kid has made and puts it right back to the way it was. So that makes it really safe for the kids to tinker with it. Plus, it's not a reset in the sense of like Windows. Windows has a instant freeze mechanism or deep freeze or those sorts of things where it actually gets rid of all the personal files as well. This retains all the personal files, so kids don't lose anything, right? So essentially, it's a safe, free environment for kids to experiment and explore and do interesting things and really break their machines. But then, when the teacher really needs the machine to work, they can put it right back to the way it was and make sure that everything works. So, and I'm sure we'll have some anecdotes about that as we go along. Another key, obviously, I'm an IT director, small IT department. We're a district of 10,500 kids, and I only have, now I have five total staff with 10,500 kids and 15 school sites. So that's not a lot of IT support. When we rolled this out, I only had three, you know. So it had to be just about completely support free. So that's you know, another reason for the rapid recovery. And the easy deployment was a big one for us. We needed to be able to roll this out at scale very rapidly. We got $1.7 million or something like that from EETT. So we ended up buying, you know, 1,700 netbooks and doing a whole bunch of support and those sorts of things. I had to roll 1,700 netbooks out over Christmas break. You know, so I had to figure out how I could do that, and that's why we built the rapid recovery into the USB key, or the rapid install into the USB key. So it takes 5 minutes to install off of a USB key. You can walk around with a bag of 30 or 40 USB keys, walk up to a cart, take all the laptops out, and in about 15-20 minutes or so, you've updated all of those machines. So we do that every summer. We make our way around, and in 5 minutes or 15 minutes or so a cart, we can upgrade all of our machines. We're back in business. So we've scaled out now to 3,000 netbooks. We actually did that scale before I hired any more support and haven't had any issues with staff or timing or those sorts of things. So all of these things were keys in building the system to make it flexible and usable in an education environment, and those were kind of the focuses. Okay, and it's totally free. You know, we're not in it for the money or any of those sorts of things. We just want everybody to use it. You know, we want to improve the education environment. It's been picked up. You know, we have a little movement on our hands here. It's been picked up by something like 30 or 40 school districts now across the country. We just had one in Argentina roll it out, and there's one in Vietnam that rolled it out. There's districts in the UK that are looking at it. It's kind of growing rapidly just because it's engineered for the needs of an education environment, and that's the difference. I think the problem that a lot of us have with new operating systems and Linux and those sorts of things is that it's so different, you know, and you don't know how to try it or how to do it, and everybody worries that they have to know exactly how it works, and we've kind of taken all of that difficulty out of it and made it super easy to deploy and super easy to roll out, and hopefully it just works. So that's the background story on UberMix. I hope if you have questions about that, you'll ask, and I hope all through the panel discussion here you'll ask questions. Just interrupt us along the way and say, hey, I got a question about this, I got a question about this, I tried that, it didn't work the way I wanted it to work, you know, those kinds of things. We can talk about some of those things, because, you know, there's always stuff. There's always changes, always differences, always issues.
How often did you come up against a program that you would have to use a wine to potentially bring it in, or you decided to find another outside application or a directly written application where you said, hey, the teacher had Type to Learn or something and they wanted to have that on that system?
Well, let's talk about that, panelists. I mean, you faced that, right? What happened to you, Andrew?
Well, we looked to move to web-based tools wherever possible. We were when I deployed, it was high school environment, right? So you're less dependent on apps and K. But there are, I mean, the common stuff's built in, right? There's typing software, TuxType.
Yeah, there's a couple of typing applications.
There's alternatives out there. But I think more and more that's going to become less of an issue. We're looking at mobile devices. iPads don't run most of these apps anyway, so you have to have those conversations with people. But I think for the most part, we really didn't have issues, at least at the high school level. We were able to find alternatives to pretty much everything.
Yeah, I think our only problem was one program where we couldn't find an alternative because it was like a managed type of music called Music Ace. It kind of was it's old school, but they wanted to have a managed system so they could actually monitor the student's progress. It talked to a database, you know, which was on another environment, so we had to use Wine to do it, but eventually it worked.
It's not easy, yeah. Getting Wine to run a Windows program. We tend to avoid, personally, we tend to avoid Wine as much as we possibly can and go with web-based solutions. But if you have to use Wine, you have to use Wine, and it works sometimes. Sometimes it doesn't work. There have been a couple situations where we've personally done VirtualBox.
Okay.
You know, we'll put VirtualBox on it, and we'll run Windows on it. You know, if we have to run this Windows app, we'll run a Windows app. You can also do RDP, which we've done. We have, you have terminal servers or Windows servers that are capable of doing terminal, basically remote app functionality, and you can set up remote app icons, and they click on it, and it brings the remote app up. They don't even know they're in Linux, or they're not in Linux. And VirtualBox is an easy way if you want it to actually be portable. So you can do that too. What about you, John? Have you faced any issues with that?
No, we're pretty heavy into the cloud-based apps. So our teachers might have Windows machines on their desks, and their students are all running the netbooks with the UberMix, but because they're all using cloud-based apps, everything. There's no difference, and for the most part, the teachers are pretty hands off on the student machines, other than if they have to re-image them or something.
Now Larry should probably he's just in the middle of it, so he's facing all of it, so he can really it's fresh in his mind.
I still been dealing with it every day, but you know, these netbooks are really a specific use device. Okay, they're meant for a one-to-one program. They're meant for kids to get technology in their hands, so now that the students can have access to, you know, all of human knowledge on the internet at any time that they want, and be able to produce, you know, student artifacts, to be able to do stuff, not just digest content and be like, okay, now I got to write it down, but to say, okay, I can get content off the internet, any kind of content, since it's a full computer, it's not limited in any way. I can go online, get whatever I need, get it together, create some kind of presentation, paperwork, some kind of something to hand in, to turn in, to actually create content. Where you're getting into these special software, like we have Waterford, we have Renaissance Place, we have just all these different things that are very specific. So you're still going to have your computer labs for these very specific apps. You're still going to, like Waterford requires an obscene type of system to run. So you know, you've got to have still all this different stuff. You have to buy product where product is necessary, and it's got to be specific. Otherwise, you're just going to end up buying, you know, Core i7 desktops or Core i7 laptops for every single student for the one chance that they might need something specific or whatever, and then you're going to have to, I mean, might as well run, you know, gigabit copper at every single desk. You're really not going to have a single unit that's going to take care of every single need. You've got to go specifically for what you want. And for our one-to-one program, we sat down and we talked about with the principal and the superintendent, and we said, hey, you know, we need to get a device in every kid's hands. We've got to start somewhere, and if we don't start now, we're going to have to buy it for everybody all at one time, and it's going to be a huge mess. So we need to phase it in. So we started with our 6th grade, since it's a 6, 7, 8 middle school, and we said, what do we want them to do? And the first thing the principal said was, I need them to be able to type, because we talked about iPads. That was the first thing they wanted. Now, let's just buy iPads. They're awesome. So I said, well, okay, if you have money to buy iPads, we can talk about that. No problem. I said, but what do you want them to do? And he talked about, well, they need to be able to you know, type their papers. They need to do internet research. I said, okay, well, you just threw the iPad out. You can't type your papers unless you want to buy a $50, $60 keyboard for every single one of them. and then that's a whole other thing you got to deal with. And he's like, okay, well, what do you recommend? I said, well, for about half the price, we go with something that is, you know, much more useful. It's the same 10-inch screen form factor. I mean, it's a, you know, it's a netbook. It's going to do whatever you need. And so it's really not the, you know, not the killer device that does everything, but it does everything for the student that they really need. And so there just really was no choice in the decision. We had to do something like this because they wanted to be able to do stuff and actually get online, get what they needed, not have to dance around, I can't do this, I can't do that, I only support HTML5, whatever. They needed to be able to have the full web, plus be able to create content, not just digest it. And so those specific apps that you were talking about, you're not going to get away from that. Forever we're going to be dealing with, we have to buy this, we have to buy that for this product, for that product. But
I think Larry makes an important point that you have to have a purpose. You know, you have to know why you're doing it. And that's when you're rolling out, a lot of folks, when they're doing one-to-one, they're just throwing boxes out there. We're going to do iPads, and every kid's going to have one, but they don't really know what they're going to do. If you have a purpose and you know why you're doing it and what you're trying to accomplish, it's very easy to make the argument, well, it's okay if it doesn't do this one thing, because really our goals are here. This is what we're actually trying to create. The other thing that I would mention is when we started rolling it out, We rolled these out intentionally and tried to create a different perspective of it. We created a perspective of it as a device. We didn't call it a laptop. We never called it a laptop. We said this is a device because we didn't want to set expectation levels at all. We wanted to say this is something new. This is something different that you haven't seen. And when we rolled it out, when John and I rolled them out, you know, netbooks were new. I mean, nobody had ever seen these things before. So we kind of managed expectations going at the very beginning, going in, and said this is what we actually want to accomplish. This device does all of these very cool things, and we were able to tell them all the things that it did rather than starting with the expectation that it's going to be a full-size laptop and talk about all the things that it can't do. And that had a big impact.
I have a couple of questions. First off, printing, do your students print?
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't encourage it. But.
Yeah, we discourage it. So when we rolled it, when we designed our program, I didn't even have printers in the specs. We were going to go completely paperless, and that lasted about a week. You know, and then we had to run out and buy printers for it. But we do laser printers. I do just network laser printers. We don't buy really expensive ones. You know, the ones that we were buying at the time when we first rolled it out were Ricoh 3300s, which were like $250. We buy the bigger Dells lately, the 2300 series. They're still, you know, sub $400. But we've just one laser printer, black and white, for the classroom, and everybody shares it. And we don't set them all up for printers. That's one thing that a lot of people ask. I know there are a lot of districts out there that will actually go in there and they'll put every single printer in their wing and pre-set it up in the computer. We say that's stupid. Teach your kids to do it. You know, you have kids in the classroom. They have expertise. They're smart. They can figure this stuff out. Just show them how to do it once, and they'll figure out how to connect to whichever printer they need to connect to.
The other question I have was, I did download this, Larry. Actually, I mentioned this one day, but I did download it and tried it on some desktop systems as well.
Uh-huh.
It seemed to work fine.
Yeah.
For the most part. But one of the things I was curious about is the underpinning here. Is this Ubuntu 12?
It is Ubuntu. It's 100% Ubuntu underneath.
Is it Ubuntu 12?
It's Ubuntu 12 in this one, yeah. It actually says on the website when you download it which version it is. That if you look at the download, it says this is based on Ubuntu Precise, you know, 12.04. Yeah. This is actually Ubuntu underneath. It's just got a different launcher on it. So if anybody who's familiar with Ubuntu would have seen the Unity launcher with the bar down the side, and it's actually Ubuntu is an interesting animal because it has its own interface. They decided to kind of redesign the desktop paradigm on their own, and they've made a lot of decisions that have not been terribly popular. And don't necessarily work very well in an education environment. And as I said, we were looking for ease of use and you know, cell phone style interfaces and those sorts of things. So this has Ubuntu underneath it, but the interface on the top of it is unique. So that makes it easy to support, though, because you can look stuff up. You know, Ubuntu, whatever, and you'll find
stuff. About packages?
Yeah, all the packages are there. All of that stuff is there. So you got 100,000 apps, or I think it's 200,000 apps, something like that, in the Ubuntu Synaptic Software Center. And there's bunches of them, you know, thousands and thousands of them on the internet that aren't in the software center, so lots to go from. Yes, sir.
As I walked in, I saw this line, no management. You need to inventory, you need to distribute. What do you mean by no management?
Anybody want to take that?
I don't have these in my inventory at all. In fact, this one's probably not inventoried anywhere. But anyway, what I did, when they first came in, I had my my wife and kids open all the boxes and so we can get them all torn down over the summer. I brought them to our middle school, and I had the librarian pop the battery off, scan the ASUS barcode under the battery for the system serial number, and check it in as a textbook. And so in our library manager, it says, you know, all we have all these different, I think it's just electronic storage media or something is as close as I could find as a category. And I just said, scan it in. So now they're checked out like a textbook. As far as software goes, I mean, every now and then I'll get an email here and there that says, you know, so-and-so, their system won't boot up. I say, well, did you rebuild it? Oh, no, let me try that first. So if the built-in restoration function, which basically you turn it on, hit escape and say, what's the words? Restore to defaults or
yeah, reset to
factory default,
factory, something like that. Some term that you'll see, and it actually gives you two options: factory restore or something, and then another one says it'll actually destroy user files. So it's plain in front of your face. If that doesn't work for some odd reason, you throw a thumb drive in it and do it again. I haven't had that work once, and it was ended up being a problem with the netbook itself. But, you know, buying 200 of them, you're bound to get some that are no good. But I mean, there's I don't deal with anything. I don't deal with a whole lot of questions other than here and there with this, which is just, it's not a question about anything other than how do I do this? You know, the kind of tech support where somebody from the office calls says, how do I do this in Excel? Same kind of thing. Very rarely do I get anything from kids. Every now and then they might, as I'm walking from one place to another, they might stop me, hey, Mr. Rico, how do I do this? And, you know, I kind of tell this one kid, and of course it spreads in about 30 seconds to every other student. But, yeah, I mean, really, the kids, they get into it. They love it. They can't get enough of messing with them. I mean, they're telling the teacher, hey, what else can we do? You know, can we do this on our netbook? Can we do this on our netbook? And that's really driving the teachers to get into it. But I don't really, you asked about management. I really don't know what I do. I don't manage anything on these. I really manage the people using them, and that's not even a lot. I mean, these.
Do any guys use Fog or that kind of image
stuff? You can. You can use Fog, but it's faster. We find to image them with the USB keys, you know, so because you can do them all at once. You don't have any bandwidth issues, and it takes 5 minutes. And teachers can do it. So you can hand a teacher a USB key, and they can just, if they ever had a problem with one, they could re-image it, and 5 minutes later they're back in business.
Students,
but
students can do it.
But the students can do it too.
That's exactly what we did. I gave a couple keys to the school site. I said, there's one to your site tech. Here, hold this. And then there's a couple other teachers that had them. I said, here, just try it. I think they've used them maybe 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, there was a school district in Chicago that had an interesting situation. They actually had a union issue with that. So what they were doing was they have their kids do the imaging, or to do the re-imaging on the computers. They would hand out, right at the beginning of the school year, they'd hand out keys to all the kids, and the kids would update all of their machines with the latest image on the keys. And then the union guys who said, no, it's in my job description to do imaging, had a beef with that. So they had to deal with it. But that's the easiest way to do it, yeah. If you engage your kids and just hand them a bunch of USB keys, they can be rolling in 5 minutes.
Nothing, any authentication
that? Have you guys done any authentication?
I tried it once. I set up a few netbooks. It's possible, right? I
mean, oh, yeah. It's doable.
But the point is, it's... If you think of it as it's a user device, it's an endpoint that gets you to the web. So if all your services are in the web, are on the web, that's where your accounts live. The device really doesn't. It's not user specific in that case. I mean, it just becomes.
You increase your support issues at that point.
Right. Yeah. It's not worth the overhead is the idea. That's kind of the way we made it.
The netbooks are sub 300 now in terms of cost, and. You know, we usually in a lot of instances where we're using it, the students don't take them home. In some cases, they're actually just one language arts class, for example, that are using them. So each period, different kids are coming in to use the netbooks and stuff. So and like Andrew's saying, a lot of the apps that we're using are web based. My Access, Glogster, VoiceThread, all of these are web apps that all manage themselves. We also use Datamation for our carts. There's a Datamation cart that allows you to that sits on two trays, and you can get about if you use the pocket underneath, you can get about 36 netbooks in a cart. I think there's actually 36 AC units. There's nothing special about where you have to plug that cart in, provided it's not the coffee room with the refrigerator or microwave and the coffee, but. Regular outlet in terms of storage.
That's true. We did some measurements on it, actually. We put a meter on them, and they only draw a full cart of 36 netbooks or so only draws about 11 watts So it plugs into any socket and it doesn't pop the circuit breaker, which is nice. If you've ever had a laptop card, many times you have to have switches on with the card to charge half the card and then the other half of the card and all that kind of stuff. You don't have to deal with any of that stuff. So. Yeah, well, Ubuntu decided to stop calling it Remix. So what ended up happening with Ubuntu is they had a separate edition for netbooks, and they had the separate launcher in netbooks. And then what they ended up deciding to do was make Unity the generic launcher for everything. So they just kind of merged them all together. So it was really just a launcher issue that caused those two different versions to exist. So usually what I like to do is I like to maintain the previous version because a lot of folks don't like to update every year. You know, and I try to do one update a year, because Ubuntu actually does two updates a year. But I try to focus on one that's coming around right around the summertime. It usually gets released in April, so I like to have that one ready for the summer so that we can be ready to deploy an image and those sorts of things. But I'll keep the last version for a district that wants to go a couple of years on a cycle. So it's completely up to you. You know, I don't really want to force everybody to upgrade every summer if they don't want to. You know, so yeah.
We're still on last year's version.
Uh-huh.
We like it a lot. Mm-hmm. When we first installed it, we only did one. We didn't do the updates.
Uh-huh.
Teachers wanted the ITILAC, so we had to go back. And we have static IP addresses.
Right.
So we had to go back and do the updates, wiped all that stuff out. Mm-hmm. Can you explain what the Synoptic Package Manager does and why we had to run that afterwards? Does that make sense, what I'm asking? Because we couldn't, unless we ran that, we couldn't see our wireless, we couldn't see all the stuff, we had to clean it out somehow.
I'm not sure, I'd have to get...
Okay.
Yeah, because Synaptic Package Manager is where you install applications. I mean, that's one place where you can do searches to search for whatever you might want to install on the machine, but you shouldn't have to run
that. We actually, you know, you said you got to run this afterwards, and we have no clue why. It worked perfect as we did that.
Oh, so right.
Hardware. Everything came up.
Right, that was a hardware issue. Okay, so, and that happens a lot. So one of the things that you'll see is, especially if you're rolling out one of these versions that I'm putting together early in the summertime or in late spring, one of the things that will happen is I'll put a new version out there and then everybody grabs it and tries it. And sooner or later, someone's going to have a piece of hardware that's going to have an issue of one kind or another kind. You know, and then they'll send me an email, say, hey, I have a problem with this, and then I'll roll out another version. So you'll see lots of versions roll out in a rapid succession right at the end of the spring, basically. So I started out, this one started out as 1.0, right? And we're on 1.062 or something like that right now. Those rolled out in a span of about 6 weeks, all of those updates. And it was just to fix problems for people. You know, someone had a little issue with this piece of hardware and I had to tweak a driver to make it work properly with that device or this device. Now, in your case, you already imaged them all, and what I didn't want to do is I didn't want to have you re-image them all, right? So I just gave you the command that told you how to fix it yourself. Okay. Right, and it works fine. And what I've gone to now is, if you look at the Ubermix site, there's on the wiki, I actually have the change log, which tells you what I've changed. But the other thing that I've done is I put another link to a page where I actually tell you how to do the changes yourself if you don't want to reimage all your machines. So you'll have all those commands right there just to fix your stuff. So, yeah. And then it happens on occasion. You know, someone will get some weird brand new Broadcom card or something that needs a driver, you know, or they'll get a weird Athros card that has some kind of glitch that needs a little bit of a fix or whatever. And I build those in as we go, but sometimes it's easier just to do it manually. Yeah.
Can I pick up on something that was mentioned earlier?
Yeah.
So in my environment, we ran about 100 netbooks. And but once I had that experience, we had a ton of old Dell desktops, and we were running as basically thin clients for Windows Terminal Services. And what I found was Ubermix worked great on them. And so we actually ended up converting all of our labs that were standalone PC labs to Ubermix. So it allowed us to not only unify our student computing environment and give everybody basically the same interface, same apps, but allowed us to extend that hardware out.
Yeah.
And it's just another way to think about Ubermix. It's not just for netbooks. I want to do a T-shirt on that or something.
I'll do that next year.
It does. I mean, it works great for, you know, refurbs now. I think somebody yesterday said they're like $189 for a Dell Core CPU. You know, you slap Ubermix on that and it's going to run great. So
That's another option. That's something that we did this year, too, and we've been doing it for a while, but we really institutionalized it this year, is telling our folks, you know, hey, it's okay, we'll take donations now. You know, as long as they have been purchased new within the last 4 years, and they've got at least a gigabyte of RAM, you know, and they work, we'll take your donations. And we told all of our people, all of our principals, and those sorts of things, if you take the donations, we're going to put this on. It's going to be just like netbooks. And they're thrilled. They're like, great, because it's just like what we have on our netbooks in the classroom anyway. And I don't have to worry about a special custom image for each Windows machine, because all the drivers and everything are all built into the key. They're all built into Linux, so they generally just work. I mean, you plug it in, you install it, and you're off to the races. And then, as Andrew said, it's not just for netbooks. I'm running on an XPS 13. It's a brand new Ultrabook. That's what I use for my daily drivers. So, you know, if you find that netbooks don't have enough horsepower for you, you want something a little bit more powerful, for the same $500 you might spend on an iPad, you can get a $500 laptop that's a rocket and put this on it, and you'll have, you know, really awesome video editing on this device and all those sorts of things. So that's something to consider. I think it's interesting. We've kind of got the reputation of being the netbook operating system, but it really is just a generic operating system you use on anything.
I want to throw something out there about the $300 price point. I went to a local college, and they were upgrading, and there was a huge pile of old Dells that were going to e-waste.
Yeah.
And we loaded up the truck, and we brought them back, and cleaned them all out, top to bottom, tested their hardware. We were mixed with a lot of them and started doing one-to-ones and a few classrooms for
That's cool. And that's what we want to do. You know, we want to get to the point where we don't have to think about it. It's a device-centric model, you know, and we can roll it out to as many kids as we possibly can without having any cost associated with it. That's the important thing.
You're talking about creating stuff. What about the files? Are just stored locally, or do you have Google Apps?
But you can. We do all of them. I don't know. What do you do, Larry?
Both.
Both. Yeah.
We have one remote site. So the kids that come from that school, generally, there's just no way they're going to get anything except for satellite if they want high speed. And that's, you know, way out of their price range. So a lot of our kids don't have any internet at home that live in this area. And so they'll use the integrated LibreOffice. Is that what's going on right now? Yeah. So they'll use LibreOffice for their, you know, Word, Excel, PowerPoint kind of stuff. They'll bring it in, and generally that's when they start to print stuff. But I've shown them all. They'll take those and they'll upload them to Google Docs. So basically we try to live online. It's just so much easier that way. I have way less to do when they just do everything Google Docs, okay? But, you know, we've got to have a way to do stuff when, you know, in the offline mode. If they don't have access at home, that's what they got to do.
What did you guys do?
We were Google Apps back in 2007, right? So
one of the first.
A long time ago. I think when we first started doing Take Home, they were using LibreOffice quite a bit. Locally, and then a couple kids had hard drive, or they dropped it or whatever, and realized that was probably not the best place to keep their files. So we really encouraged everybody to start using the Google Apps for all their stuff. So it just, like Larry said, it makes it so much easier because you don't have to worry about it. I mean, it's there, it's accessible. If their netbook has a problem for whatever reason, they can go to another one, and you know, they can go to the lab and get their files.
There's all the other cloud storage stuff works too. You know, I've got Dropbox on mine. You know, you can see there's a Dropbox icon. It's gray right now because Dropbox isn't working because I don't have internet. but Dropbox, you can do there. There's Ubuntu has their own. It's called Ubuntu One, and everybody can have an Ubuntu One account for free as well to store their content on. It syncs just like it does with Dropbox or anything else. It'll also connect directly to your server architecture. It connects to Windows. It connects to NetWare. It connects to Apple, even if you wanted to connect to an Apple server to dump your stuff out too, so kids could store their stuff in those files as well. But it is a management. Kids essentially have to learn to manage it, just like you and I have to learn to manage it, right? You know, when we want to go someplace with our laptop, and we're not sure, we're going to the SEPA conference, and we know we're not going to have any wireless, you know, we make sure we have copies of everything we need on our machine. You know, so the same kind of thing with kids. It's just a life issue, really, is what basically it boils down to.
How big a hard drive space?
It'll run on as little as, let's see, it'll install in as small as 6 gig if you wanted to get that small. 8 gig would be preferable because you could use a little space in that home folder.
Which brings up the other question,
It's technically will run on a flash drive, but I don't have any kind of an installer that would do that. But it is technically possible to do that. I have actually thought about that, putting on an SD card or something like that too, you know, putting it.
I was thinking Raspberry Pi.
Right, right. Yeah, well, Raspberry Pi is an interesting animal because it's a different kind of architecture. And it's this is built on i386 and I Raspberry Pi is an ARM device, so getting it to work on ARM would be interesting. I have actually redone it once for PowerPC Macintoshes, so I've seen people with Emac Labs and things like that that have been set up with Ubermix because they didn't want to get rid of their old Emacs. So it is possible, but it's not something that I've looked at. It's real seriously, anyway.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is a lot of people are talking about the smarter balance assessments, the STAR assessments, they're all going digital. So the netbooks right now are, other than Windows and Mac, are the only platform that are fairly guaranteed to work with those. You know, your iPads and your Chromebooks and stuff won't facilitate that at this point. They say that they will in the future, but, I mean, if you're looking at devices and stuff for those kinds of issues,
yeah, as you're building out your one-to-one for SBAC, yeah, think about that because I can. We're a pilot district for SBAC, so we'll be doing the tests on Monday, and I already have all of the stuff, and it is only available for Windows, Mac, and Linux. And what they're doing is to make it work. One of the things that was essential for them was that it be a secure environment, so kids couldn't hop out and go jump on the internet and those sorts of things. So they actually built their own build of Firefox to make it work. So what they're shipping you is a version of Firefox. But the interesting thing about that version of Firefox is that it's coming with Flash pre-installed and with Java pre-installed, which means that they're expecting that you're going to be using Flash and Java in these with these smarter balance assessments, which makes sense because if you look at who's putting the assessments together, it's Pearson. And what's Pearson's content? Pearson's content is all Flash and Java. So it all fits together really nicely. So we know that it works on the netbooks. I've already installed the SBAC client on it, and it does work. We're going to put a bunch of kids through the tests on it on Monday, and I'll tweet out and post out, you know, how well it worked with the kids. But I don't expect there's going to be any problems because it ran just fine, you know, on these things. So we know it works here. I also know a few folks at SBAC, and part of the reason they said, yes, we can support iPads, and yes, we can support Android and all of those sorts of things is because they listened to Adobe when Adobe said we have an HTML5 converter for Flash, and Adobe's abandoned that project. So now they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. They've got to try to figure out how to convert all their content to some other format like HTML5 that will be supported on those devices. So right now the insider assumption is that there's not going to be iPad support for several years after the launch of SBAC. So it's going to be a while before that happens. So consider that and share that with people when they're thinking about rolling out these big, big deployments of iPads, that you're not necessarily going to be able to use those on SBAC, at least not at the beginning.
Hey, we'll just PDF scan the paper test.
Yeah, that's right. You can go on.
Can I talk about deployment for a second?
Because oh, yeah.
I've deployed netbooks and iPads, so there's an interesting contrast there. And
he's tried everything, so he's the guy.
Yeah, except Chromebooks, but I just ordered some of those. So
he's crazy.
Yeah.
Is this kind of a four-man substitute for Chromebooks?
I would
find that Google Apps.
Actually, I wouldn't say
no,
it is.
No.
It's a full computer.
It's cheaper, but it's better.
Yeah, I was going to say, Chromebook is a poor man's substitute for Ubermix, in my opinion. Now, just so you know, I had a few folks that wanted to have the Chrome-like experience, okay? And if you look on the wiki, I have instructions for making this run like a Chromebook. So you can boot this thing, it'll come straight up, and it just runs Chrome web browser, and that's all it does. So if you want to make it a Chromebook, you can make it a Chromebook too. And you can do it for $260 instead of $450.
Thank you for doing that, Jim. I appreciate it. But really, my experience deploying netbooks, we purchased 80, and we did four cards, actually. But I did that in 4 hours, right, with netbook keys all bought, to me. And then I did 300 iPads, and 300 iPads took all summer, more or less. It took like 3 weeks with me and a part-time student assistant. And at the end, I had office staff and my superintendent in there. We were trying to get things out the door. I think they've improved a bit with the Apple configurator, but it's a completely different experience. And so from a deployment standpoint, netbooks, that's really the only time you're going to touch it, is when you go into image them initially, and then maybe if you do the refresh it, you know, over summer, depending. And it's a quick 5 minute per device, whereas, you know, when you go to deploy iPads, you really need to think about how you're going to do it logistically, and it becomes a logistics exercise. These, and Larry just went through it, and he
One
knows.
Day, 210. half a day one day, half a day the other.
It's a totally different kind of experience. And if you're like most of us and you don't have a lot of support, that's something that you got to consider. So.
Yeah, we had three guys. We did 3,000 in 2 weeks. So in the summertime.
I can't even imagine doing 3,000.
How did you get those unboxed?
It wasn't the. I'm talking about re-imaging over the summer. Yeah, the unboxing, the longest
that
thing
was the longest part.
Is horrible.
And all
taking them out of the box is holy cow. One thing that was nice, and I'm sad that Dell doesn't do netbooks anymore, because we bought 300 or 400 netbooks from Dell somewhere midstream. And one of the things that Dell did for us when we bought that many netbooks was they unboxed them for us. It was fantastic. They sent them to us in a box, ready to just pull out of the box and stick in the cart.
Dell used to do imaging.
They did imaging too. They imaged them all for us, yeah.
Okay.
So they did all of that stuff, but then they decided they weren't going to be in the netbook game anymore, so we got hosed on that one. But I will tell you that I've had some interesting conversations with Acer VPs, and it sounds like if your order is of sufficient quantity, they will do that for you too. So the sufficient quantity to them sounds like about 300, however, so if you're not buying at least 300, you're probably not going to get them to do it. But they'll actually build them custom for you too. So they said, you know, if you can give me an order of at least 300, we'll put matte screens on them if you want. We'll do whatever you want, and we'll ship them out to you. If you give us a couple of weeks lead time, and we'll give them to you just the way you want. So you just have to, as long as you have the quantity, they'll do it for you.
I have a general question about when you guys do your one-to-one initiatives. Is it predominantly a one-to-one take-home or one-to-one stay at school in the cart? Talk about that a little bit and what the success has been.
Who wants to go first?
Why don't you go first?
When I went with our principal, I said, I want to go all out. I want to do this is the best way we can do it. What's going to be the best for the kids? So they take them home. They're theirs. We sat and we thought about all these different little details about how, okay, they need to be good for 3 years. So we tried to create a sense of ownership where we said, okay, you know, at the end of the 3 years, you have the option to buy this netbook from us, so it's yours. And we incentivize the purchasing, saying, okay, well, if you buy insurance, we're going to discount that cost for you. So if they were to buy a year of insurance, at the end of 3 years, their netbook would cost, I think it was like $120. If they bought 2 years of insurance, it was $60. And if they bought 3 years of insurance, which was about $130, at the end of 3 years, we say, here you go, take it home. Within the first year, I mean, ASUS takes care of a lot of the issues for us, as most vendors do. But in creating that like sense of ownership, it's really kind of helped so that the kids, they're very protective of it. They don't take their backpacks, put their netbook in it, and they go, boom, and throw it across the room like they do now with their regular backpacks. And so it's really created a nice little culture of taking care of these systems. I mean, they're still, you know, dirty as can be. I just think, how do you look at that screen? But they don't mind, so that's their problem. But generally speaking, I mean, I think three kids have popped off arrow keys, and it said they were because they were playing games. So whatever. But I mean, generally, the kids take care of them. They know that at the end of those 3 years that they have the option to make them theirs. So they really been customizing them, just tweaking them all the time. They always ask, hey, can I do this? I'm like, I don't care what you do with it. As long as your parents are okay with it, do whatever you want. And so it's really working out well, the taking them home thing. And I think out of 170 kids almost, I think we have three parents total that refused their kids to take them home. Two, because they didn't trust their kids. So we have them where they show up in the morning, their first period teacher, they get the netbook, their netbook.
Okay.
They use them during the day, and at the end of the day, they leave it in that class because they have the same starting and ending teacher, which helps. And then one other one, the parents, I don't think there was like some misunderstanding, so they weren't really sure, and we just kind of said, that's okay, you know, we'll pay it. But that's three parents, you know, that either refused or just were unsure about it, so. And not a problem at all. We really like that setup that we've gone with so far.
When we rolled it out for fourth grade primarily, which is a lot of younger kids. So we decided to keep them in school. We have carts at school that they charge in and those sorts of things. Another reason we decided for that was because our plan, we wanted to plan for sustainability long term. We wanted to figure out how we can continue to fund this. And one of the strategies is to go with a parent purchase model. So what we do is we say, we'll set the minimum requirements for the hardware. parents can go out and buy whatever they want for their kid, and then we tell them we're just going to put UberMix on whatever they buy. Okay, and that way we can continue to fund it for the long term, and we only have to provide netbooks for the kids whose parents don't buy them. Well, if we keep the netbooks that the school owns in the school, that provides a little additional incentive for parents to perhaps buy the netbooks so that the kids can take them home. That's our thought process, but that's where we're at.
Well, you answered part of my question. That was, it sounds like you're on a 3-year refresh cycle then. And how do you fund that? But with my school, we're so high free and reduced that very few parents are going to be able to maybe even buy the insurance. So,
well,
you'd
be surprised. I mean, how many of your free and reduced kids have cell phones?
Well, that's
right.
And spinners on their SUV.
Yeah, and you tell them. Yeah, I mean, you tell them also that they're going to be able to keep this thing for 3 years. It's going to cost them, and they only cost a couple $100. There's no other costs, right? Because you've got the software. You're giving them the software, so they're going to have all of that. If you, as a school district, come to a parent who might be struggling a little financially and say, hey, you know, if you're willing to invest in this device for your student, we promise you, we commit to you that we will train our staff and we will use it effectively in the classroom. You'll be surprised at the commitment level that you get. I mean, we've had some pretty good responses. We've done some pilot testing of our parent purchase program across the district, and we have another side of the tracks just like every other school district. We have a significant school with free and reduced, and we were quite surprised at the response that we got from our parents. You know, we had a very high purchase rate even at those schools. We're thinking we're only going to have to provide maybe 20%.
So on an equity level, though, how are you filling in for those?
Yeah, you fill in for the students who can't. Yeah, you still fill in. So the school district still has to purchase it, but it makes it possible to fund a one-to-one program. You can actually go one-to-one because the parents are actually supplementing it. Our next step right now is to form a foundation. Our school district doesn't have a foundation, so we're putting a foundation together, and that foundation is going to fund, you know, the kids who can't afford it. And that's the way we're going to handle it. But that makes it possible.
Same thing or similar?
In our program, we pretty much we worked with fifth graders originally in our first rollout of these, and then in the second rollout, we did middle school kids, and those are classroom dependent. They stay in the classroom because they're shared multiple periods. But with the fifth grade classrooms, the original netbooks that we got, the 901s, we left it up to the teachers in terms of whether or not they would allow a student to take. You know, because it doesn't matter to us. I mean, we had a few replacements in terms of, you know, if something were to go horribly wrong, we had to replace it, we could replace it. But at this point, even those fifth grade laptops that we started with five years ago or whatever, they're still chugging away in those fifth grade classrooms. We've got teachers writing, grants to get new batteries, foundation grants or whatever, to get batteries for them. But those laptops are still chugging along.
Yeah, we bought 1,700 in the initial round, and I've only lost 120 in 5 years. I keep sending them to ASUS, and they keep fixing them. They tell me how much it's going to cost. I send them a PO, and then they never bill me.
Really?
So that's the deal of the century. So it's actually been working pretty good. So we send them in 20 at a time, so we try to not to inundate them. So right now I've got about 100 right now sitting at the district office that I've got to send in to get fixed. But so far they're still running. The only thing we've been purchasing for them is batteries. That's it. So
our district, as far as budget-wise, our schools, we only have the one for now, but they really had to sit there and make a decision because we don't have a whole lot of free and reduced. We don't get hardly any E-rate funding. I think we just got one round in the 9 years that I've been there at that school site last year. So they don't get a whole lot of funding from outside. It's one of those schools that's in the middle. They're not poor enough to get funding, but they're not rich enough just to buy whatever they want. So they had to make a commitment. This first year was kind of difficult because there's no savings yet. You know, we're not like not buying textbooks yet, okay? But that's the plan generally, is to say, okay, if we don't have to buy one textbook for every single kid to take home, and a set to have in the classroom, and a set to sit in the library for 20 years doing nothing, we're trying to save money there. We're trying to save money with general expenditures, paper, things for the kids to use in class. We're trying to save all these different things here and there, but it still requires that commitment from the school to say, we need to commit a portion of our budget to this. So saving money, textbooks, that's great, but it's not going to cover the whole cost. And so, especially with infrastructure, because they had a little wireless here and there, but we had to throw one in every single classroom to make sure that we had that level of infrastructure that would support all these netbooks. And so our sixth grade wing is now great, but then next year we're going to have infrastructure. The year after that we have infrastructure. We'll be able to sit for a few years without having to upgrade that wireless. I mean, it's wireless, so we should be all right for a little while. But then we've kind of worked all that in, and so the principal said, you know, we've just got to, we have to look at this, set our just pieces of our budget aside in all different kind of budgets to make sure that we have enough, so that way we just do one grade level per year. So in 2 years from now, the whole school will be one-to-one, and as long as we just keep one year at a time, you know, barring anything majorly significant budget changes. I mean, we're already looking at terrible budgets now. So if it gets any better, that's going to be even better. But right now, we're just trying to look at little savings here and there. He's been saving money for the last couple of years, though, in anticipation of this, because to start is difficult. Like I said, we don't have that initial money savings really anywhere until we go through a textbook adoption cycle or whatever that is, those different supply savings.
Well, I'm afraid we're out of time. But thank you all for attending, and I'm sure any one of us would be willing to answer any questions you might have after the session out in the hall or whatever. Thanks for coming.
So, you said that...
I'm sorry, John.
Jeff, that's the gentleman.
So, do you have a...
I work with
Send for us.
That's awesome app.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, tap it.
My engineer has called me multiple times. He's always been very helpful with them. We really appreciate it.
Definitely want to help
it work well for everybody.
We're taking our whole middle school one-to-one next year.
That's awesome. How about that, huh? It's Windows Mobile. It's called My Business Card. It's just something so basic.
So
here, they scan it.
Very cool.
You have lots of
them. Yeah, QR code everything.
Loving it.
So
basically, my question is related to when you need the one.
Six,
starting
at six so far.
So when
what's that?
Yeah. The only one? Okay. Actually, I got a lot.
Yeah, well, I figured it would be better.
Well, right now, I've been talking to high school. The hopes are that by the time they get to be a freshman, that they will have a one-to-one initiative starting. Either they'll start buying handbooks, so the kid comes from middle school, most of these kids then are going to come in, so the high school may only have to buy 50, 60 networks, right? Or devices, whatever. So the hope is that by starting at 6th grade,
just put you,
we can
to
kind
the
of
test
continue
here.
Up to
bring
the
in
high school.
Book by.
And in that hopes, too, I've even talked to the principal, like, hey, can we talk about funneling money from the high school
yeah,
down
no,
to 6th
right,
grade
right now.
In the idea, with the idea that the high school benefits from this middle school network program. So there's all these different ideas that we have to think so far outside the box. Otherwise, you know, it won't happen. So our high school level has no one-to-one initiatives, but we're working on it. We're trying to get them to initiative and see it for them. 6th grade level, 6th grade level. High school level, we do all 9th graders. Some teachers have, you know, 10, 30 different levels of different kids, you know? So it's a different idea at high school level, but we've got to do something that's going to help filter up. So in a couple years, they'll start inheriting those.
Your business card?
It's my podcast card.
Well, this is just who we went with.
What do you guys do about...
Before we went this year, we was all these... I really like their products.
Acer had, which is no OS...
Under $300, $297, and 2 gigs of memory.
If you're running Chrome, obviously Chrome updates.
And now they're only $260.
Keep seven on.
But yeah, so Java and Flash.
Yes, a lot of vendors had to drop it under threats of Microsoft.
Java. These are 101. Java that I put on it right now.
It's not like you go there and you're like, hey, this one's a typical Java. Why is?
Change the license.
It's 2 gigs of memory, 300 hard drive.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So the Java that's on there is OpenJDK.
The thing that I really like about this one is that when I bought these in March, they come with the new Atom in, and it's a 2600 CPU. So
if you look on the wiki, there's actually...
And so actually you can watch, you know, 7211CX.
Oh, yeah, I just got those for 260 from CW.
Yeah, I was going to say. No, it's 260. 260 something. They're 1011CX, Charlie. I paid $297 when they first came out. But what makes these awesome, like I said, is that Atom...
Our kids wouldn't be using Infinite Campus.
The Cedar Trail chip and the 2 years of memory. So
yeah. Oh, yeah, that's usually...